We continue to read from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, Hare Krishna. Chapter 9, entitled Mother Yasoda Binds Lord Krishna, text number 4.
Tam stanya kama sadhya. Madnantim jananim hari. Gritva dadi mantanam. Nyaseda prithimavad. Tam
unto Mother Yasoda.
Stanyakama.
Krishna, who was desiring to drink her breast milk.
Asadya.
Appearing before her.
Matnantim.
While she was churning butter.
Jananim.
To the mother.
Hari.
Krishna.
Grihitva.
Catching.
Dadi mantanam.
The churning rod.
Nyasedat.
Forbade.
Pritim avahan.
Creating a situation of love and affection. Translation. While Mother Yasoda was churning butter, Lord Krishna, desiring to drink the milk of her breast, appeared before her, and in order to increase her transcendental pleasure, he caught hold of the churning rod and began to prevent her from churning. Purport. Krishna was sleeping within the room, and as soon as he got up, he became hungry and went to his mother. Wanting to stop her from churning and drinking the milk of her breasts, he stopped her from moving the churning rod. We see how Mother Yasoda, by her great devotion and her desire to render service to Krishna, takes advantage of the situation that all the other servants in the house are engaged in service for Krishna. So immediately she thinks, let me myself churn some butter for Krishna, not thinking like, oh, what a drag, the servants are busy today, I gotta do it myself. No, she's very happy that she sees the opportunity, takes advantage of it, and she herself is churning butter for Krishna. Krishna, however, seeing her intense desire to please him, becomes attracted. He becomes so much attracted by the sincere desire of Mother Yasoda and her great endeavor in devotional service that he himself appears and acts in an unexpected way, rather than just simply reciprocating with her and fulfilling the desire which at that moment she has in her heart, rather than just being there and waiting for her to complete the butter and then very happily eating the butter. Krishna has another plan. He interferes. He grabs the churning rod and stops her from preparing that butter for her, and rather he wants to drink her breast milk. So in this way, Krishna is even fulfilling Mother Yasoda's desire to a greater extent, greater than at that moment she is meditating on. Lord Krishna is going deeper. He's going to the root of trying to satisfy her deeply within her heart. And this is the nature of Krishna, that he knows the desire of his devotees better than we are aware of them ourselves. Because our awareness of our own internal life is very, very limited. These days we see in psychology, as it's become very fashionable to think of the subconscious and and to delve deep into that subconscious to see what may be living there, because we're not in touch with what lives in us. And even one who is a great and exalted devotee of the Lord can never know himself as well as the Lord knows us. The Lord knows better than we do ourselves how to fulfill our desires. And in this way he is arranging to fulfill our desires even better than we can do. Another very interesting aspect is that Mother Yasoda, she is attracting Krishna to come to her. So this is the nature of devotional service, is that the yogi, he is very much concerned with developing the strength and power to lift himself above the material energy. Because he notices the oppressive nature of the material energy and desires a better destination, and therefore he's performing all kinds of austerities. He's trying to gain all kinds of powers to somehow or other elevate himself to the spiritual sky. And he's endeavoring very much. And certainly, with a very troublesome process, the yogi, some yogis who are very serious, may elevate themselves. But yet, the devotee is following a whole different process. The devotee is simply trying to please Krishna and attract the attention of Krishna and the mercy of Krishna. And ultimately, the devotee will attract Krishna himself. Krishna himself will come to the devotee. Rather than that we are so concerned from how are we going to get to the spiritual sky, it is very far away, isn't it? And in this regard, I remember a conversation of Neil Armstrong. It's mentioned in the Prabhupada Conversations book in Bombay. One devotee is telling about Srila Prabhupada, about Neil Armstrong, who was one of the first astronauts or major astronauts in outer space. And the interviewer, the Indian interviewer, is asking him if he had some religious experience while he was out there somewhere floating in between the planets. So Neil Armstrong said, well, I looked, you know, but I didn't see God anywhere. I guess he was somewhere on the other side. Yeah? And Prabhupada commented, and Prabhupada said, yes, that is true. Actually, we look up to the sky, and we are looking for the Supreme Lord, and it is true, we should look upwards like that. He said, but Neil Armstrong, they're not looking far enough. Even Neil Armstrong did not look far enough. He did not look beyond the limited space of the universe. He did not look beyond the different layers that surround the universe of earth, water, fire, air, ether, etc., each 10 times thicker than the other. He did not look to the spiritual sky, and therefore he did not see the Supreme Lord, who is definitely there. So, many, in cultures throughout the world, we have seen many people trying to endeavor to cross that difference to the spiritual realm somehow or other. By means of all kinds of practices, they have tried to grab that distant ethereal reality. And we see how some have practiced processes of great austerity, others have practiced processes of deep meditation on that other world. And again, others have taken external means, herbs, drugs. We have, even in the history, we see in religious history, Rimbaud is a famous personality who tried to get mystic experiences by taking drugs. So it's not new. This was going on long ago. But ultimately, all these processes, some are completely faulty, and others may have some merit to them. But still, the perfect process is very different. Just like in another conversation, the topic of discussion with Srila Prabhupada was the Brahma Jyoti. And some devotees raised the point that they thought that the Brahma Jyoti was very far away. And Prabhupada said, no, it is right here. It is right here. The Brahma Jyoti is right here. We're right in the middle of it. Brahmano ipatistatam. That everything rests upon that Brahma Jyoti. Everything rests upon that energy of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, the material world for the transcendentalist is not the material world. The material world is equally spiritual as the spiritual world. Therefore, we are saying that the jiva never fell down, right? Because we are still within that spiritual realm. It is just a matter of perception. And one who has transcendental perception can see that we are here directly within the spiritual realm. Therefore, there is no need for an external adjustment, for changing place and trying to get away from this planet, this Mrityuloka. Here we are in the middle of samsara, the cycle of birth and death, caught up in a network of karma and ignorance, being entrapped here in the three modes of material nature within this material universe, always whipped by various forms of suffering. Here we are, right? Struggling with our existence within these bodies. But yet, if one has transcendental understanding, if one understands actually his true position, then he understands that there is no material energy, that all energy is the energy of the Supreme Lord. Just like in another conversation, Allen Ginsberg, I like the conversations that Prabhupada had with Allen Ginsberg, because he was not exactly a disciple. So he was always challenging, you know, like where disciples, they were sometimes in the presence of Prabhupada, well, a little intimidated, right? And then wouldn't like continue the questioning or the challenging. Allen Ginsberg was fearless and would never give up. So he wasn't so easily defeated. So that was, whereas devotees may walk away, well, you know, afraid to ask the next question, but in their mind it may still be there. So Allen asked these questions. So it came to the point about the worship of the deity. And Allen Ginsberg was pointing out that in many cultures of the world, such as the Muslim tradition and a good part of the Christian tradition, the point is, how can you worship an image of God? Because ultimately you're dealing with the unlimited spirit, and how can you capture that spirit in limited matter? That is impossible. That is not possible. So it's contradictory to try and create a form of the unlimited spiritual manifestation, which is the Supreme Lord. So he was arguing this point, and Prabhupada, and he just kept on hammering on this limit of matter. Prabhupada, that's just a limited perception of reality. One who has a limited perception sees the limitations of matter. But one whose vision has become expanded to the spiritual platform, he can see that matter is none different from spirit, and that it is also spiritual energy, and therefore that there are no restrictions, and that it is the very same energy of the Supreme Lord, and that he may enter within it. So in our movement, we are very much adhering to that philosophy. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu established the philosophy of Yukta Vairagya. This philosophy of Yukta Vairagya is a very wonderful philosophy, because it is a philosophy where we can take the material energy and use it completely in a spiritual way, by which we transform the material world into the spiritual sky. By perfectly utilizing the material energy here in this material world, we are in the spiritual sky. And the distance disappears, and the very spiritual sky will be manifest before us right here and now. And this is a very important principle of our movement, because it makes our movement very practical. It makes our movement a movement that is right here in our life of today. Therefore, we need not enter into a deep meditation on the more ethereal aspect of Krishna consciousness, the spiritual sky. It is certainly, we are all a little curious about the spiritual sky, and you oftentimes get questions about the spiritual sky, like some question, well, I heard that in the spiritual sky, everything that exists and is manifested there are living entities. And that, so someone had this point about, well, so all the trees and all the fruits, they're all living entities. Then what if Krishna eats an apple, right? Does he eat a living entity? These kind of questions, right? It used to go around the question. You know, I'm not going to entertain the question, so don't ask me to answer it. I'm not going to. Because the point I want to make is simply that to try and figure out the spiritual sky from our present perspective will always remain imperfect, will always remain faulty, will always remain limited. Therefore, that is not our process. To enter into understanding the relationship of the Ragatmika Bhaktas or such devotees as Srimati Radharani or such devotees as Mother Yasoda is very difficult for one who is not himself on a level of full transcendental realization. Therefore, that is not our position. It is not required to fully enter into the spiritual sky. Yet the Supreme Lord very kindly descends onto this planet, bringing along with him his transcendental abode and performing there his transcendental activities to attract the attention of the conditioned souls who are in deep forgetfulness. And gradually one can approach these transcendental activities of the Supreme Lord. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is arranging for a purgatory process, a process of hearing and chanting, which establishes that one should not merely hear the transcendental message spoken by Sukadeva Goswami, but one should act upon this message. So as one is receiving the message, one's vision becomes broadened, one's vision of reality grows very much. With the very first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Janmadi Asya Tonvatat Icharatas Chattes Tabikya Swarat, we immediately begin to understand how the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna is behind everything. He's the origin of everything. He is all-pervading, he is all-knowing, he knows everything, and yet he's completely independent. So many things are immediately described about Lord Krishna. And so our vision of reality becomes broadened gradually, and then so many principles of behavior are given to us. After all, the four regulative principles are given to us in the scriptures. It is not that Srila Prabhupada himself thought, well, how am I going to regulate the sinful residents of this age? Rather, the Srimad Bhagavatam gave the standard, and Prabhupada carried that message of the Srimad Bhagavatam. He carried the message of the Srimad Bhagavatam not only in the form of the translated books, but also in a very practical way in everyday life. And principles like panam, striyam, jutam, or the four regulative principles are basically given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. No meat, fish, or eggs, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex are regulative principles which come directly from the Srimad Bhagavatam. So in this way, the Srimad Bhagavatam is regulating and purifying the life of those who are hearing. Those who are hearing Srimad Bhagavatam are gradually broadening their understanding and at the same time are changing their behavior by implementing the instructions in Srimad Bhagavatam. And by readjusting that behavior and by expanding our vision and understanding gradually the position of Krishna, in this way we can come to the 10th canto where we can gradually appreciate the transcendental nature of the pastimes of Lord Krishna. Still, merely by hearing the transcendental instructions, one cannot understand them. Even by very strictly following all the rules and regulations of the scripture, one can still not fully understand the nature of Krishna's pastimes. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we see how Sanatan Goswami was instructed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And there are a whole number of chapters being dedicated to these instructions. They are very, very detailed and very complete. The entire process of devotional service is really dealt with from the very beginning till the most exalted platforms of devotional service. Still, even after hearing all these descriptions and all this philosophy, Sanatana Goswami approaches Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he asks Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to now please say that let these instructions be manifest in my heart. He's asking Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to say that, right, to bless him in that way. So, because without the mercy of the Supreme Lord, even transcendental knowledge cannot be really manifest within the heart and cannot be fully understood. Therefore, we are gradually approaching the transcendental activities of Lord Krishna. Therefore, oftentimes it's been a policy in Bhagavatam classes to not discuss the 10th canto and to go through the various cantos from the 1st till the 9th and then to return to the 1st canto. But now we have begun to discuss the 10th canto. And in spite of the fact that many of us have read the first 9 cantos, right, and that many of us may have accepted many principles that are outlined within these first 9 cantos and within other essential scriptures describing the duties of bhakti yoga. And in spite of the fact that we have adopted this way of life, we can still not fully understand. We cannot fully understand. Therefore, we are simply absorbing. We're absorbing these descriptions of Mother Yasoda churning the butter and how Lord Krishna is desiring to please her, how he's reciprocating with her, and therefore that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is limiting himself. The unlimited, all-powerful, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Parameshwar, the Supreme Controller who controls everything that manifests in the entire cosmic manifestation, who is the controller of all the worlds, both spiritual, material, that Supreme Personality of Godhead agrees to be limited to a child, which is a very limited position. Child is not very able yet, can only do very limited things. A child cannot go very far away from home. A child cannot do huge tasks compared to an adult. And only when you become an adult, you can do so many things. Child, very dependent on his mother. But that dependence is is the essence of the whole relationship. Therefore, the Supreme Lord is with great pleasure taking the limited position of a child. So that is a very wonderful feature that we can understand about Lord Krishna. Next, after we have entered into this verse, yes, we remember the residents of Vrindavan. Like yesterday, the verse was pointing out that we should take shelter of a resident of Vrindavan. So at this point in time, we cannot fully taking shelter of a resident of Vrindavan and serving Krishna in the same mood as that resident of Vrindavan. That would be artificial. But still, we can take shelter of the residents of Vrindavan in meditating on their spirit, on their spirit of surrender and devotion, and their spirit of eagerness to serve Krishna. And this very eagerness, out of this whole narration, this chapter, we must take this spirit of eagerness of Mother Yasoda, and we must apply that in our own service. We must see that we must simply take the pleasure of Krishna, just like Mother Yasoda. At the time when Krishna was captured in the coils of Kaliya, first there were only cowherd boys, so many bad omens were there in the sky, there was trembling in the arm and of the eyelids for the man on the left side, inauspiciousness. And quickly the residents of Vrindavan went to see what had happened to Krishna. Balaram didn't go with him that day. And when they saw that Krishna was captured in the coils of Kaliya, then Mother Yasoda didn't hesitate for one moment. She was entering the water. She was going. She was going to fight. She was ready to fight. Yeah? She didn't consider one moment whether she was equipped to fight with that huge serpent. That was not the concern. She was going to fight. Yeah? That was her spirit. So, if we see how much Mother Yasoda was prepared to extend herself for Krishna, then we must take inspiration from this principle and understand that that is the qualification to go back to Godhead. That the qualification to go back to the spiritual sky is to be like the residents of the spiritual sky. Then Lord Krishna himself will descend to his devotee. Like Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur sang, Ye Dina Griyate Bhajana Dekhi Goloka Bhaya, that there where pure devotional service was manifest, at that point, when it manifests in your home, then your home will be transformed in Golok. It will become Golok, right there. Golok will manifest in your home. And in your home, Mother Yasoda and will become manifest before you. And this is the nature of the Parishad devotees, who are the intimate associates of the Supreme Lord, who are known as Jivan Muktas, who are, even when residing within this spiritual world externally, are actually already residents of the spiritual sky. So this is our process. So we do that by acting here. Like I've seen in Vrindavan, how some devotees went to Radha Kund and started deep meditation on the various kunjas that are being maintained by the Astashakis, who are the direct expansions of Srimati Radharani, who are maintaining these kunjas where Radha and Krishna perform their pastimes and appear at different times of the day, and how the Manjaris were assisting these Astashakis in serving Lord Krishna. And it is described how one of the Manjaris was cleaning the floor of that kunja with her hair, sweeping it with her hair. Okay? And yes, this is fully transcendental spiritual activity. This is the spiritual sky. Simultaneously, we read in the Srimad Bhagavatam how the ladies of Vaikuntha, how they are sweeping the floor of the beautiful palaces that are there in Vaikuntha. And yet it is described, there is no dust. There is no dust on these floors. Still they're cleaning every day. It's not that like someone writes his name in the dust, you know, or someone writes, I want to be cleaned or something like that, you know, as you see sometimes on dirty cars or something. No, there is no dust. But yet, dutifully, they're there cleaning. Because they understood the real purpose of cleaning is not at all to take away dust, right? That's just an impetus to force us to do it. But the real meaning of cleaning is to please Krishna, right? Is service to Krishna, service to the Supreme Lord. That is why we are sweeping and cleaning, right? Not because there's some dust. That's only here. So, in this way, we see how all the whether it is at the in the Astakalya Lila, at the Kunjas, at Radhakund, where the Manjaris are sweeping the floor, or whether it is in Vaikuntha, where the residents with four armed forms are engaged in sweeping the floors, or whether it's right here, there is no difference. There is no difference. The service is exactly the same. Therefore, there is no difference between the floor in Vaikuntha or the floors at the Kunjas at Radhakund and the very floor right here. So therefore, it is not required for us to meditate on those floors that are far away. Rather, since we are here, it is our business to deal with this floor. As the residents of Vaikuntha deal with their floors, the residents of Radhakund deal with theirs, and we deal with ours. So our service is here. Like I noticed also many times that on great festivals in Vrindavan, some devotees, there's some festivals they're celebrated in all the temples, and some devotees are very eager to see all the festivals everywhere. And I'm not criticizing that. I think that's very wonderful if you see all these festivals. Very enlivening. But I also noticed that the Goswamis of those temples, like in the Radharaman temple, they were always in their own temple, completely busy serving their own deity. They were very busy with that. And they were absorbed in their service. Because they were not thinking, well, what will inspire me? No, they were thinking, what will inspire Krishna? Right? What is my duty? What must I do for Krishna? So in this spirit, we are serving. What is pleasing to Krishna? What is inspiring to Krishna? What is needed for Krishna? What needs to be done for Krishna? And that is the spirit of the spiritual sky. That is the spirit of Mother Yasoda. Mother Yasoda is not thinking of her comfort, what she likes to do. She's just always meditating on what Krishna likes. What he might like, how she can do something nice for him. That is our spirit. It is very simple. So our movement is a very simple movement because it is simply meant for pleasing Krishna. And we have been given a domain. We have been given a territory in which we are to perform that service for Krishna. That is in particular within our temples where we maintain the temples very nicely for the deities, and that is in particular on this planet where it is our duty to distribute the congregational chanting of the holy name and to distribute these transcendental literatures which have been brought down to us by Srila Prabhupada. So it is very simple. We are a very simple movement and our spiritual life is very simple. It only becomes complicated when we start worrying about our own personal needs, our own personal desires, our own personal satisfaction, and our own personal advancement, and our own personal this, and our own personal that. When we simply worry about satisfying Krishna and fulfilling Krishna's mission, then all these other things automatically come. Everything automatically comes. We automatically go from the practicing level of devotional service into the spontaneous level of devotional service, and we automatically enter deeper and deeper into these pastimes of the Lord with his intimate associates, we automatically become more and more attracted to it. Automatically, the point will come where we do not have to consciously remember them, but where automatically our mind is drawn to these transcendental activities simply by working hard right here in our present situation. So that is the brilliancy of this philosophy of Yukta Vairagya, which is unique and which is the very property of this movement, and which can bridge the gap between transcendence and matter, and can truly make us realize that we are already present within the spiritual sky, within the eternal pastimes of the Supreme Lord and his eternal associates. Any questions or comments?
Many people who had near-death experience, they mostly speak about a tunnel, and at the end of the tunnel they see some brilliant light. Mm. That light is just the Paramajyoti.
It is many times described how people at the time of death, out of body experiences, they have some varieties of experiences, and many people have the tunnel experience. So it is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam that one may leave the body at the time of death. One is pushed out of the body by the bodily airs, and the soul is resting within the body, within the region of the heart, within five types of air. And at the time of death, the soul is pushed out of the body, along with the subtle body. And that may be through various openings within the body. So one of these may be through the anus, and one may go through the intestinal tract, which is a long, dark tunnel. Yeah. So in that way, the tunnel experience can be by leaving that way. The experiences of the light being Brahmajyoti at that point, I wouldn't think so, that generally speaking that would be the case, because when the living entity actually exits from his body, he is certainly not just going into the spiritual realm. It's not that after, when we exit of this body, that we are automatically going for a little while into the Brahmajyoti and then come back down. No, we are simply staying within the material world, or if we are highly sinful living entities, we are being dragged out by Yamadutas and presented before Yamaraj, and then being placed in a condition for punishment and purification. But we are not generally speaking just getting the experience of Brahmajyoti. So we find this, this is New Age philosophy, and very popular. But in our philosophy, even the experience of Brahmajyoti requires quite some realization, and is only available for those who are truly highly elevated personalities, great transcendentalists. Of course, you may at times get a little preview of so many things. You may get a preview of the Brahmajyoti. You may get a little vision of Krishna. Right? These things are all possible. Right? It is certainly so that if the Lord desires, he can give you a vision of either the Brahmajyoti, he can give you a vision of the spiritual sky. All these, he can do that if he desires so. But as a rule, we cannot say that, after leaving the body, you will see the Brahmajyoti. That is not our philosophy. It is the philosophy, though, of some others. It is particularly Tibetan philosophy. In the Bardo Todol, this is the first experience you get. According to Tibetan philosophy, you shoot out of the body at the time of death, and you get a first confrontation with the Brahmajyoti. Right? And then if you fail to recognize that as divine, then you get various forms that start appearing. And each time if you fail to recognize them as divine, then gradually they transform in more demoniac manifestations. And this lasts 55 days, according to them, and then you go back into a womb. And it's described as the Bardo Todol. So this is concoction, this is complete speculation, which has influenced people around in the New Age circuit, and therefore we will encounter this philosophy from time to time. It may also come from other corners, you know, that idea of the one, of the all, the great merge, where we all came from and where we're all going to, but in fact, we are not adhering to this philosophy. Who are not in the bodies, yes. Alright, so there's no fixed time in between two bodies. It depends a little bit on your destination, because you may not necessarily stay on this planet. You may go to other planets within the universe, and there you may appear in other forms. Therefore it is an individual thing. It's not hard and fast. As far as spirits around us, there are many beings in subtle bodies existing. And some are in the category of devas, because the devas or demigods, there are 33 million, which some are major, such as Surya or Agni or Indra, who control major forces in the universe. But there are also many devas who are of a minor nature in compared to these great demigods, and who control smaller things within the universe. So they are all subtle beings, and therefore in ancient tales, right, we sometimes hear about some kind of creatures like that, right? And that comes also to us through sources of New Age, right? So there is some, the Vedas recognize that there are many subtle entities like that who are favorably disposed. However, as devotees of Krishna, we are respectful to all the devas, even the main ones who we know by name, and all the smaller ones who we may not know by name. Yeah, we're coming to that. First I went to the devas, and then, so we're respectful to the devas, okay? But we are not concerned with the devas. No, it's okay. We're not concerned with the devas directly, because if you please Krishna, then they're automatically satisfied. Now other people, living entities that are less favorable to us, are living entities who left their bodies under sinful conditions, and therefore they did not get a gross body, and they became what we call ghosts. Yes. So ghosts sometimes may act in ways that seem favorable. So people think that such living entities are favorable, some are favorable and some are not favorable. And this is also very fashionable now, channeling, etc. But actually we should understand that none of these living entities are favorable, because they are in a very difficult condition themselves. They are suffering, and they are full of unfulfilled desire, material desire, and they have no facility to fulfill it. So their main priority is to ultimately fulfill their own desire. So even if they are friendly to us, then we should understand that is the bait to get us on the hook, and once we are on the hook, they will misuse us. So therefore this channeling that is going on these days is a very dangerous activity and is very detrimental. And will reap great havoc and disturbance for the individual, will cause a lot of distress. So one should stay away from that. It is not a good thing.
And if you lost like someone, a person who died, and you still feel the person around you with love and communication, what can you do? I mean, it's like a vision or...
Well, when you are a devotee, you have access to a great power. You have access to the holy name, which is Krishna himself. So if you chant, then automatically all the those who have expired are very much benefited. And you can also get other great benedictions upon the departed soul. You can offer prasadam to the Vaishnavas on behalf of the departed soul, and in this way solicit the blessings of the Vaishnavas, which are very powerful because they attract the blessings of Krishna. So when the blessings of Krishna come upon the departed soul, then that personality will tremendously be benefited. You can also perform certain ceremonies of Shraddha where you offer some prasadam of Krishna to a picture of the deceased. There's some details for that. So in this way you can further benefit that person. So once you have access to devotional service, then with that you can benefit that person. And that is the best thing you can do. Right?
It's not possible to learn from the person. Like I had a feeling it was more like my teacher.
Yeah, but they may teach. Okay? But whatever they will teach can seem to give some result of goodness, some result of benefit, but it's temporary. The only teachers who are eternal teachers are teachers on behalf of Krishna who come in a line of the cyclic succession. So that is the real teaching. Yeah. So when you come in contact with that real teaching, then you can even teach those who were your teachers before. You become the teachers of your teachers. Like that. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.